Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, hi.
And Amber, say hi.
Hi.
There we go. And we are here for another fun Monday night of talking ghosts and stuff. So, you girls have a good weekend?
Sure did.
What'd you do?
I don't know. What did I do?
I'm so excited. Oh. Yeah. Calm down.
Well, I was looking at something. No. I had a private investigation Saturday.
Oh, yeah. How'd that go?
It went pretty cool.
Oh, man.
We've got some EVPs already from it, so.
Oh, you're going to have to let me listen to those for sure.
Oh, show.
How about you, Amber? Anything interesting happened this weekend?
I can't say it went bad.
Well, yeah. That's good. Mm-hmm. It's always a good thing.
Yeah.
I had a good weekend.
What did you do?
I got to see you two on Saturday night. Always a good time.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
we had a little fast party. What? That was pretty cool.
Yeah, a fat party.
That's right. Ain't no party like a fat party because a fat party don't stop. That's what I'm saying.
So, I don't know if we mentioned, I can't remember when we were talking about it. I know me and Howie were talking about it, having a booth at Paracon for fat.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys got to hear about that.
No, I think we had walked out.
Yeah, we're supposed to be getting our own booth at Paracon, I believe.
What day Paracon is?
It's I think it's in April, isn't it? Like, I think it's like the 19th or something. But I think that's around Easter.
Easter is
on a Saturday.
20th, I think.
Easter's late this year.
Because we're going to St. Albans the following.
We're going to St. Albans on the 26th, right?
Huh?
You're going to St. Albans on the 26th, right?
Yeah, and that's like the end of the month.
So, yeah, it would be the
19th. Easter's on the 20th.
Oh, so it would be the 19th. It would be the day before Easter. Would be the Paracon in Hampton Roads. Huh. Well, that's at least it would be nice.
Oh, I thought you meant Paracon in Exchange.
No. I think, I didn't want to say the name because I'm not sure if it's right or not, but I think Seven Cities is having a Paracon, but I'm not sure if that's the right group, so let me get traction on that. All right, I think we have our guest on the line here. Hang on.
Do you know how to do that?
Angel, is that you?
Yes.
Hey.
Hi, Angel.
Hey, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I just heard you talking about it's the Boxwood Inn. It's the paranormal conference that Seven Cities is having. Mm-hmm. Mine is September. We haven't locked down a date yet. Yes, that's when we usually have it every year.
I don't know what the hell I'm thinking about.
Yeah, we haven't locked down a date yet because Scarefest in Lexington, Kentucky, runs in September, and we don't want to coincide with that because last year I did, and I wasn't able to have the speakers that normally come because they were already committed to the Scarefest. So we're still popping around dates, and we're going to lock one down soon. So,
well, let's try not to do it at the end of September. Let's try to do it at the beginning of September.
Okay.
That'll work.
That's well. See? That's something, now it's something like dates in mind. Now, that's good. That's good. So how are you doing tonight?
Yeah, but you should definitely, I'm doing well. You should definitely go to the Boxwoods one in April. It's April 19th. It's a Saturday. And wonderful group hosting it. And they kind of took the idea from the Paracon at the Exchange and are taking it down that way. And so I'm so honored that they are doing that.
That's good, because they can get people from, like, North Carolina to come up, more Virginia Beach area. People who can't make the drive up to Gordonsville can go that one. And, heck, if they like it, you might bring more people to the Exchange in September.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's you can't do anything but help.
Yep, you know, absolutely.
Howie and I
it's all about
are
paranormal unity.
There. Exactly, bringing people together and stuff. Yep. And if people have fun there, they'll definitely have fun at the Paracon in Gordonsville, because I went last year and I had a blast. It's a lot of fun.
Well, that's good. I'm glad. We're hoping that our third one will be bigger and better than the first two. So.
Yeah, we always want the next one to be bigger than the last one. I'm sure it's going to be awesome.
Absolutely.
So, I guess a lot of our listeners don't know much about the Exchange.
You want me to give you a brief description?
You can give me a brief description, a long description. I mean, I am, like I said.
We are the last standing Civil War receiving hospital in the state of Virginia. It's called the Exchange Hotel Civil War Medical Museum, and we are located in Gordonsville. And it's in central Virginia. We're not too far from Charlottesville and Richmond. Those are probably the two closest cities to us. Pretty small town. The population is 1,500. It's the exact same population that it was back in 1860 when the building was built. It first started out as a tavern, and the tavern burnt down, and the owner of the tavern, Richard Omohundro, decided that he would build it into a hotel because it was a stagecoach route, and it was a place for people to stop and get going to wherever they needed to go. And the trains came through. There was the Central Virginia Railroad, the Orange Alexandria Railroad, and then later on came, oh my goodness, I can't remember the name of it. Oh my goodness. Do you know the name of it?
the railroad that went?
There were three of them.
I have no idea.
And that's why it was called the Exchange. That's why they named the hotel the Exchange. But people had to get off of the trains and have a place to stay. They had to have some type of lodging because the trains didn't run after dark. And so it was quickly built in 1860 as the Exchange Hotel, and it remained a hotel up until the First Battle of Manassas. And when that broke out, the trains were bringing soldiers through to go to Richmond because all of the state-funded hospitals were in Richmond. And when the train got there after the Battle of Manassas, there were over 1,000 soldiers that needed to be treated and fed and taken care of. And that's when they quickly made it into the hotel, into the hospital, and treated the soldiers there. And they also disconstructed the Moore Hospital in Manassas. They put that on the train. And when I say that, it's not like it was an actual building. It was like a tent city type thing. And they quickly brought it to Gordonsville, and they set it up on the property there. And there were 110 beds in the hospital, the Exchange Hotel Hospital, which was the building. And then the tent city had over 200 beds. And we treated approximately 70,000 troops over the course of the Civil War. We treated both sides, the Union and the Confederate. And there were over 700 deaths of the Confederates that were buried there on the grounds. And there were over 100 Union soldiers that were buried there on the grounds. A lot of tragedy, a lot of sadness, a lot of deaths. That's why we're listed as the 15th most haunted out of the top 100.
Are the soldiers still there on the ground, or have they been moved?
No, they were reinterred. Later at the end of the war, the Federals took the building over, and they turned it into a Freedmen's Bureau. That actually lasted longer than it did a Civil War receiving hospital. And wow, what was that?
I have no clue. It's roommates. I'm keeping myself on mute for a while.
I'll be here listening, though.
All right.
Oh, okay. That was really loud. I was like, what was that? sorry.
Okay.
So I lost my train of thought. My goodness. Oh, it was a Freedmen's
Bureau.
You're talking
about a Freedmen's Bureau.
A Freedmen's Bureau is an institution for the newly freed slaves to learn how to read and write, and different buildings, they did different aspects of it. At the Exchange Hotel, they did everything. They adjudicated court cases there. They also did the free health care for the newly freed slaves, and they also did schoolroom, like classes, to teach them how to read and write, because at the end of the war, you know, the slaves weren't educated, and once mm-hmm. they were free, they had to learn how to make it in the world. And so this is what the government came up with as a solution to teach them these things so that they could be able to make it in the world and to make a living. And so that's what the building remained for 3.5 years. And when it became that, the townspeople were so irate that they had their, you know, Confederate soldiers buried there on the ground on this Negro property that they
yeah.
commissioned a board to get together and have them reinterred, and they were taken to the Piedmont Veterans Cemetery, which has now been changed into the Maplewood Cemetery. And they're still there to this day. The Union soldiers were all taken to Culpeper National Cemetery. But, you know, I attribute that to some of the spiritual things that happened there, because they were buried and then they were
mm-hmm.
pulled up and, you know, moved somewhere else. So.
Oh, yeah, and they're fighting a war, and then civil war from the South, and then I guess the slaves are educated in their hospital. I can see why they might consider it a slap in the face. Well, some might
yes.
consider it a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's very, very interesting. When did it become a museum?
It became a museum in 1989. It changed hands quite a few times over the years. After it was a Freedmen's Bureau, it was turned back into a hotel. It's been a private residence. It's been an apartment. During the Depression, they rented out rooms. It was like a boarding house, different things like that throughout the years. And then probably in the late 50s through the 60s, it was abandoned. It was bought by an investor, and he ended up selling it to a group of ladies that were from the town that banded together and decided that they wanted to keep that piece of property and get it on the National Historic Registry. They got together in 1971 and formed a group called Historic Gordonsville Incorporated, and it's a board of directors that are in charge of preserving the history of the Exchange Hotel and the local Gordonsville history. They came together and they learned how to spackle and repair floors, and they brought her back to her glory because she was in really, really bad shape. There were no windows. There were no floors on the first floor. It was overgrown with shrubbery and trees, and it was in really bad shape. So they worked hard. They got together in 71. They got it on the National Historic Registry, I believe, in 1976. They had bake sales and yard sales and different fundraisers to gather up money to do all of that, and they worked on it from 71 until 89. So that tells you how much work that was involved in trying to restore it and get it back to where it was maintainable. And then they opened it in 1989 as the museum, and it's been a museum ever since.
It's all volunteer, right? As far as people,
everything's volunteer.
Help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep, everything.
So when did you come along, Angel? When did you get involved with the Exchange?
It was to the end of 2010. I was part of a ghost group, a paranormal group, and we came in and did an investigation there because they were doing things called night tours, which is
mm-hmm.
something we still do.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of our biggest fundraisers. That is what's really helped us as far as making sure that we get our bills paid and our taxes taken care of, because it's a nonprofit organization. The only money that we get is from donations and from tours. And so that's why they do the night tours. And when I came, I met a couple of the people on the board that were doing the night tours, and they just emphasized how they needed help and they needed volunteers, and I've been volunteering and helping ever since. I haven't looked back.
Yeah, that's good. You've done a lot. You've done a whole lot there. The first time
yeah,
I went there, yeah, it was before you came along, and it was just Chris running it. And, you know, he had different guys helping him run around, you know, running the place. But, you know, it was nothing like it is today. So, I mean, you have done a whole lot for it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I think it's not just me. It's the whole board that has done it, as well as Chris. When I came on board, he was the vice president.
Mm-hmm.
And I just came to board meetings, and I just volunteered every chance that I got. I've done everything from plant plants to clean toilets to, you know, now we've just done that renovation, things like that. But there are a lot of people behind the scenes that you don't get to see that are a huge part of this. We have a wonderful board who are, you know, so dedicated to preserving the building and saving the history to be able to educate people. Because I believe, you know, that's a huge thing for the next generation. You know, we have all of these electronics that kids are into, and I think
mm-hmm.
that they need that history. They need to know where they came from.
I love taking my daughter up there. You've met her a couple times. I brought her up just to the exchange, and she goes up there, and she'll take a flashlight and do the flashlight test and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
She definitely enjoys coming up there and, you know, getting out. And it's good. It's right. It's good to have to educate our kids about the history and everything.
We
can
do.
Anybody
That's all
come
we
up?
Have.
Exactly. Can anybody up there come over there and volunteer their time? Or?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All they have to do is come up or call me and tell me, hey, I want to help volunteer, or, you know, I can
we
kind of give them
anyway.
An idea.
Hmm?
Huh?
I told Ryan, I said, we had talked about going up there and volunteering.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
well,
Ryan and I have
you've helped with different events. You know, when we had Halloween, you came in
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
a couple of people from your group, and we were so appreciative of that.
Oh,
we
yeah.
used our Halloween event, when we made the money from that, we used that to buy a new AC unit for our summer kitchen that hadn't been replaced in 25 years. And so, you know, that's good for you to know that your volunteer hours that you did and helped out with now is what we have heat and AC in the kitchen building. So.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Do you guys still do the night tours, or is it strictly investigating?
No, we still do the night tours. It's been kind of slow, I guess, because it's been the weather, the coldness, and not
mm-hmm.
a lot of people come out to do that in the dead of winter. But usually we pick back up the end of February or so, and we do public tours on Friday nights. And that is, you know, contingent upon how many people are asking about it. If I've only got one or two people, I can't very well come up there because it's all volunteer hours. Come up
mm-hmm.
there and just sit with one or two people. So I kind of have a minimum of 8 people. If you can get at least 8 people together, we'll do a night tour, and you just contact me through the website, which is hgiexchange.org, or call me at the museum or email me, and we'll set up a date. And that's for public tours. That's the Friday nights, like I said. And it's $25 a person, and it runs from 8 p.m. to midnight. And we provide all of the equipment, and you're able to investigate all 3 buildings.
Whoa.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
That's
that answers
right
all
there.
The questions.
Yeah. I was about to ask you that, the stuff I wrote down, and she answered them all. Boom, right there. Wow.
Exactly.
That is a great deal.
Yeah.
I mean, all 3 buildings.
And, you know, you can't go anywhere else for $25 and
no,
provide
you really
that experience. And, you know, that's another thing that I brought to the board. You know, there's so many places out there, and they're so expensive, and you have to pay for lodging and things like that as well, and your gas. And, you know, I want to make it affordable for people. Yeah. But
yeah.
we do paranormal groups. They are able to book our Saturday nights. And, you know, both of your groups have been there, so you know.
Mm-hmm.
Once you book it, it's just you guys. There's no other groups. There's no people to follow you around. You know, it's yours for the night. And
sure.
That's only $35 a person. We only charge $10 extra, but that's because it's from 8 until 2 a.m. And we will go later, but we charge extra to be able to leave the groups in for a later period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's fair. I mean,
and that's all three buildings, too?
Huh?
I said that's all three buildings,
well?
Too?
Yes, with a minimum of 8. Got to have 8 people.
Okay.
And if you don't have 8 people, you can pay the difference.
Wow.
That sounds like a plan.
That's, you know, that's a great deal. And like you said, it's not that much money, and you get, you know, all three buildings.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know,
exclusive
what I hear,
use of all three buildings.
Hmm? I'm sorry. What did you say?
I said you get exclusive use of all three buildings, absolutely. And they're all closed to the public. The only thing that's open to the public for tours during the day is just the hotel. We're currently renovating the summer kitchen,
mm-hmm.
and we're hoping to have that open for tours in June. As long as construction goes, you know, as planned, we're hoping to have that open as part of the Exchange Hotel's tours during the day, so that you can go through the museum, and then you can go over to the summer kitchen and see that as well.
That's the house. That's the building right next to the hotel, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is the kitchen that Anna the cook actually cooked out of. She was in charge of all of the slaves there at the hotel, and she made the famous Gordonsville fried chicken in that building.
I was going to ask you about the fried chicken festival they have up in Gordonsville. What's
mm-hmm.
going behind that?
That is going to be on May 17th, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's the date. It's either May 12th or May 17th. I do know that you can check it out on the Town of Gordonsville website. It's townofgordonsville.org, I think, is their website. But that's just a celebration of the chicken ladies that were there in Gordonsville. They were the chicken vendors, and there was a writer that came through in 1862. His name was Dr. George Bagby, and he actually
mm-hmm.
was a guest at the hotel, and he was a writer for Harper's Weekly and different publications back in 1862, and he wrote that the Gordonsville was the chicken leg center of the universe, because when the trains would come, there were no food carts on the train. And so the ladies, you know, the slave ladies and the vendors would come out and serve chicken and pies and different things to the trains. And that's the building that they operated out of.
Well, yeah, I heard about the Gordonsville chicken. I read an article that George Bagby wrote. They'd
mm-hmm.
hand out chicken to the people in the trains and stuff, and they'd be whistling as
mm-hmm.
they were
handing
out the chicken.
They would. And we have an actual descendant of the chicken ladies. Her
mm-hmm.
name is Sharon Compton, and she comes up and does all of our festivals. She does Paracon, and she's going to do our Garden Week this year because we're on the Garden Walking Tour. And she does all
nice.
Of the food. She has the original
yeah.
fried chicken recipe. And you both, you know, you've eaten her food. She's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So the Garden Festival this weekend, too, or is it during the week?
The Garden
Week. Or
the Garden
Tour.
It's April 26th, and that is done by the local garden club there in Gordonsville. And we're
mm-hmm.
one of the stops on it. And we're so honored because we've never been on it before. And what it is you have to buy tickets, and I'm thinking it's like $35 a person or something like that. I'm not sure. I wish I had the flyer
mm-hmm.
with me, but you pay for that, and you go to the different stops of the historical homes in town, and you see their gardens, and you get a personal tour of the homes. And
that's really cool.
when
that
you get
awesome.
To the Exchange Hotel, I think we're the last stop on the tour, and that's where the food will be served. You get a box lunch with the famous fried chicken and some sides and things like that, and you get to tour the grounds of the Exchange, which all of the gardens will be manicured and done especially for that, and you also get the tour of the museum as well. So it's a pretty cool thing. We're excited for it.
That's
yeah.
great that you're the last stop, too, because that means people will spend more time there.
Mm-hmm.
If you,
absolutely.
Like, so that's great. That is great. So yeah, the Exchange has quite a history to it. Are there any like quirky stories that besides the Civil War, but anything like personal stories or stories at a hotel that people might find interesting?
As far as the paranormal side, you mean, like things that have happened coincide
whatever,
with that?
Whatever you can tell people.
Well, there was a man that lived there from 1922 until 1937. His name was John Beauregard Parrott, and he was the manager of the Exchange Hotel. And he fell down the front stairs there, and as a result of his injuries, he passed away. And his daughters were so frustrated that, you know, these stairs had caused him to pass away, that they took the stairs away. And so the Exchange Hotel didn't have stairs from 1939, I believe, until 1989, when CSX donated a set. And a lot of people, when they get on the stairs, they feel death, or they'll say that they see a man who's fallen down the stairs and things like that. So that's a pretty cool story that has to
yeah.
do with, you know, both sides, both aspects.
That is a very cool story. So are these the front stairs or just
the front stairs
inside?
Right there,
okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Because, yeah, those stairs
now,
are
I've
pretty
I've heard,
sweet.
Kind of, you know, different stories about the little girl on the third floor. I've heard that she was like a little slave girl, and then I also heard, like, her name was Sarah, and then I also heard she was just like one of the, I don't know what she was, but then I heard another story where there's like a little white girl running around upstairs. So is there two little girls or is this just one?
There are two. There is one named
I
Emma.
I have seen the little white girl.
Mm-hmm.
One of the, I think I was upstairs with Tara and them, and I think it was kind of slow that night and I had my back up against the wall and I was sleeping. And I saw her face come down and look at my face, and I thought I was dreaming it, and I wasn't asleep. I was kind of like, you know, kind of like Twilight thing, but I remember seeing her. She had a long white dress, long brown hair, and I remember her looking down at my face, and I flew my eyes open real quick, and then we all heard with our own ears a little girl running down the hallway laughing. So
mm-hmm.
I knew she was looking in my eyes like, why are you sleeping?
We captured so many EVPs of a little girl laughing. We have one of her singing.
Mm-hmm.
We have one of a man whistling, and then she's singing to the tune that the man's whistling.
Aww.
It's really cool. We've been featured on My Ghost Story. On the Bio channel. A couple of years
mm-hmm.
ago in February, a group came out and they captured some evidence of what we think is Emma. And but we have all kinds of things happen that pertain to her. But there are so many spirits there. There is the spirit of a girl named Sarah there. There are spirits of nurses, soldiers. I mean, so many people have captured actual photographs of a full-bodied apparition. I know that Twisted Paranormal captured a photograph of a soldier standing on the third floor. If you're looking up from the second floor, you can see him plain as day standing there at the top of the stairs. But, you know, just this past weekend, I had a group there, and we sat down and had a session with what we thought was Emma, and we brought a bell out and hung the bell from the light switch that, well, you know, the hanging light on the third floor that's hanging daily from the ceiling?
Yeah.
We wrapped a bell with a string and hung it down so it's just free-flowing and hanging there, and we all sat at the other end of the hall where the bench is, and we asked her to ring the bell if she was there, and she rang the bell.
That's awesome.
It was really cool. Mm-hmm.
That is so cool.
But, you know, with me working there all day long, my desk is down on the main floor, and right above me is the Bagby room. I hear footsteps constantly, full conversations, and, you know, I've got the whole security system right there beside me. I can see, and there's not a soul there, nobody in the building. So stuff happens all the time. And I get that from people. They're like, you know, does it just happen at night? Do you just have to come on a night tour? And I'm like, no. It's active all the time during the day, you know, in the evening, and you know, some days so much more than others. During Christmas, oh my goodness, I heard classical music on the second floor, and we have no sound systems. We have no type of wiring for any music or anything, and I heard it plain as day when I came in. Lots of voices, women talking. I've heard my name called multiple times. And when I went in last Wednesday, I'll never forget, I went up to the second floor because when I come in, you know, I'm getting ready to start the day and get everything ready and cut all the lights on. And when I get to the second floor, we have huge bars across the double doors, and I have to go out and hang out the flags on the front porch. And so I was taking the bar off the front porch door, and I hear a man, and he's behind me on the third floor, and he says, "Whoa, there she is." And I said, "Yep, I'm here. Good morning. Let's start the day." Things like that.
Awesome.
I hear stuff all the time.
See, that would be great.
Is there anything like really kind of freaked you out? You hear something like whoa, that's kind of freaky. Has anybody actually kind of scared you when you heard it? Or
the only thing that's ever freaked me out is in the depot. I feel like the more darker stuff is in the depot, but that's just me. I was out there sitting in a chair, just a regular metal folding chair, and we had a group out there, and my chair got kicked in, and I hit the floor. And that's the only thing that really freaked me out, because nobody, you know, none of the spirits are usually malevolent towards me, but that one did scare me, because I was like, whoa, if they have enough energy to kick that chair out from underneath me and me hit the floor, I'm ready to get the heck out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that probably, you know, that probably scare me a lot if, you know, if the chair got kicked off from underneath me. I think it would scare anybody.
Yeah.
To be honest.
You know, the voices and the noises and things like that, I'm so used to that, it doesn't bother me at all. But the chair being kicked out from under me. I've also had my hair tugged and played with and things like that, and people have actually physically seen it. I'll tell them to cut their flashlights on. Somebody's playing with my hair, and they'll see my hair is sitting out, and that doesn't even freak me out. But the kicking of the chair, that scared me.
See, that I'd like to see. I think that'd be cool. See that.
Yep.
Hair being played with. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, back then, the women would always pull their hair back and have it in a bun. And even now, everybody wears their hair down, and, you know, I think they're just fascinated with it.
I'm not used to it being down. Like, oh, this is pretty cool. Let's hair here. Hair. This is pretty neat. There's a nun's room upstairs in the third floor. The nuns used to live there, or what?
That's called the Sisters of Charity room. During the Civil War, when Dr. Levy, he was the assistant surgeon in charge there, when it first started out as a hospital, people don't realize that there weren't nurses, there weren't hospitals. You know, it was an unheard of thing. You just had the local doc in town, and you would call him, and he would come and, you know, do his thing and try to treat you. But when Dr. Levy had the hospital, he had written a letter to the Sisters of Charity to ask them if they would come down and kind of help him out, help him get this hospital going. And they came down from Alexandria. It was three of them. And the way we found out the history of it is they had written memoirs. And we had read that they had said when they got there that the people that were taking care of the soldiers were the slaves, and they were male slaves, and they really didn't know what bedside manner was. They would, you know, go to help a soldier by lifting him up or to help feed him, and if he winced in pain or, you know, anything like that, they would just drop them because they were, you know, so skittish and so scared. And so the Sisters of Charity came in to teach them bedside manner, to be compassionate and to be, you know, gentle with them and to teach them what they had to know as far as cleanliness as well. They said that when they came that they were using a stump for our kitchen table, and that the slaves, the doctors, the patients, and everyone were all drinking from the same utensils, the same cups, and things like that. So they pretty much came in and taught them how to clean and make sure that they disinfected things, washed things, and how to take care of the soldiers and treat them. And they stayed for a while. They stayed in that smallest room, and that's why we redid that room and had that as the Sisters of Charity room, because they wrote that when they got there that they turned sleeping on a coverlet on the floor that Dr. Libby had given them. And, you know, two of them would be out taking care of people while one was sleeping, and then they would just, you know, keep rotating shifts like that.
Okay, so I was about to ask why. It's like, the room's small. So three people staying in that one room, but they're taking turns in the room, so it wasn't like all three of them were sleeping at the same time.
Right.
That room. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
And that room is pretty active. That's the room that the little girl likes to go into. When I had the group here this weekend, this past Saturday, I came up to kind of, you know, when groups get there, I give them a brief history of the hotel and take them through all the rooms with the lights on so that they can, you know, familiarize themselves. It's a big building. And if you just go right in with all the lights off, you don't know where you're going to go. You don't know what you're going to see. So I kind of give them a brief history of the building with the lights on. And as I took the group to the third floor, there's a curtain there that's in that little room that's facing the back parking lot. And there's been lots of paranormal groups that have captured photographs of a little girl looking out that window or a woman standing in the window. And we now have two beds on each side of the room, and right at the window we have a little, like a little dresser, like a washstand type thing with some religious memorabilia on top of it, and the curtain is behind it, and it's a full-length curtain. And when I got up there to cut the light on to show them the room, the curtain had been moved from left to right as if a small child had been peeking out the window.
That's cool.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I lock up every day, we close at 4 o'clock. We are open 10 to 4 during the day for our tours. And when I lock up and cut all the lights off, I make sure, you know, the bed linens are all straight, the pillows are fluffed up, the curtains are shut, you know, things like that. So I do know that that day when I left at 4, it was all straightened, and then when I bring them up there, the curtains moved, and that's a pretty cool thing.
That is really cool. That's awesome. Can you tell us about, is it Emma?
Emma?
Isn't there a room? It's called Ella's room.
Ella's room is downstairs on the second floor.
Is there any significance to her, or is...
No, there's a lot of people think that it is. We just named it Ella's room because the photograph of the woman on the wall, her name was Ella, but she was never at the Exchange Hotel.
Okay.
Yeah, but
I got you.
Her room used to be the diorama room, but it's pretty active as well.
Yeah, I definitely...
And that's another thing. You know, everybody say, what's the most active room? It just depends. It just depends on the time. It just depends on the day. There's no room that hasn't had activity in it, so I can't say that one is more so than the other.
That's the thing about the paranormal. It's never predictable. You take one room's active, and it's like, oh, well, this one's active now, too, or this one's active now. Yeah. It's not. It's like the weather. You can't predict it.
You can't. Not at all. You don't know who's going to show up and when. You know, and I can tell you that we have residents, ghosts there, and certain ones will be there at certain times, and then they might not even make their presence known, and you'll get something else completely different. Mm-hmm. So it's not predictable at all.
Yeah, I always expect the unexpected when it comes to the paranormal.
Absolutely.
As soon as you expect something to happen, that's exactly when it's not going to happen.
Yep.
You know, just,
you got to have patience, too. You know, a lot of people think they watch these shows on TV and they see this stuff happening right then. And, you know,
exactly.
they don't realize that when you're an investigator, you can sit for 8 hours before you get one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, exactly. It's like those, well, it's like those fishing shows you watch they have on TV where as soon as it looks like as soon as they put the line in the water, the fish are going to start biting. They don't
mm-hmm.
show the 6 hours they had sitting in a boat waiting on the fish
waiting.
To bite.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, no one's going to want to watch that. No one's going to want to watch people sitting around in the dark
analogy.
Talking to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, I mean, there's so much cool history having to do with the exchange and everything. It's not surprising to me that there's so much activity, you know, because of the Civil War and all that.
Absolutely.
All that
I mean, you have to think
that.
Of how much agony there was. These poor men
mm-hmm.
were out in the field. It's not like it is now, you know, when
yeah.
they were out in the field and they were brought up on wagons. There's another story I needed to tell you. Oh, this is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing some research, and we found out that there was a man that was injured during the Battle of the Wilderness, and his regiment left him for dead, left him out in the field, and the way we found out is he later became a writer and a teacher, and so he wrote about these happenings, and we just stumbled across them, which is the coolest thing. That's why I love to do research. And when he was, you know, injured and they left him for dead, a couple days later, a farmer comes along in a wagon and finds him out in this field, and he's still alive. And so he puts him on the wagon and brings him to the Exchange Hotel because that's the closest hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't realize that back then you had to have a pass to see a surgeon. You couldn't just go into a government-run hospital and be treated. You had to have a pass from, you know, your commanding officer.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't have a pass. And so he writes that he sat on the porch for a few hours, and somebody from his regiment walks out the front door just by chance and says, "What are you doing here? You know, I thought you were dead. We left you for dead." And he explains to him this kind farmer has picked him up and brought him there for treatment, and could he do what he has to do to get him seen by the doctor. And I'm sure he was pretty dehydrated and starving and not to mention in pain. And
mm-hmm.
he did what he had to do, pulled the strings he had to do, and got him in. And the hospital was at such full capacity that they had nowhere to put him. They had no beds. So they put him under the first floor stairwell to recover. And they gave him clove tea and 2 biscuits. And that's where he laid on the floor with a coverlet under the stairs. And I just think that just shows you how full that building was. With people recovering,
yeah.
you know, those trains coming in left and right.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he laid there until he recovered, and then he was shipped off to Richmond.
Wow.
And so that's an accurate account and something that really happened there. And he ended up surviving 23 battles, and he became a history teacher, and he wrote a book about all of his experiences, and that was one of his experiences in the book.
That is a neat story.
Crazy.
It shows
mm-hmm.
how, like, there really no room in the end, literally, you know.
Yeah, they were scrambling around trying to take care of these poor men that were coming in on the trains. I mean, left and right, trains were coming.
Well,
yeah,
you were talking,
crazy.
You were saying that you had actual physical contact in the depot. Or is there anything, any stories behind that building?
That building was actually used to unload supplies. It was the freight depot, and it remained a freight depot for quite a few years, and then it was turned in another section was added, and so it was a passenger depot as well. So back during the Civil War, that is where they unloaded the prisoners, and they
mm-hmm.
would, you know, hold them until the next train came and put them back on to ship them to Levee Prison in Richmond. That was
uh-huh.
also the place where they unloaded the bodies. If the trains got there and there were, you know, soldiers that had perished, they took them off and they stacked them in the depot to be ready for burial or to ship them back to their families. And there's written accounts that there were bodies stacked as high as the rafters in that depot. And I believe that that's why there's so much dark history there, because there were prisoners and, you know, dead bodies and things like that. And we also had a surgeon that would wait there at the depot when the train got there. His name was Dr. Craig Hill, and he was in charge of the Pestilence House, which was a completely separate building. It was about a mile away from the Exchange Hotel, and that's where they quarantined all of the soldiers that came through that had smallpox and contagious diseases. They had to quarantine them and keep them away from the other people. And so Dr. Craig Hill would be there. And he writes in his book too, his memoirs, that he could smell people that had smallpox. You know, he could just, the train would pull up and he'd be able to pick and pinpoint the people that had smallpox because it had a specific smell to it. And so I believe that by all that darkness and, you know, the more ominous stuff is out that way.
You definitely get a dark feeling when you're in that building. Although when I was in there, it was decorated for Halloween.
Yeah,
so,
we've used that building for the past 2 years to have a fundraiser to raise money for the Exchange Hotel. And so we did a haunted house, a walking trail of terror, and the depot of death is what we called it. And it was kind of decorated up to do with a doctor, which was Dr. Death, and, you know, things like that to kind of, you know, to bring in the people, because the scarier it is, the more people want to come. People pay to be scared. They love it. And so I do have an account of a lot of things happening during Halloween. I know that not this year, but last year, we had a girl that was tied up. She was standing up against the wall, and her arms were bound above her head in Dr. Death's room. And she was tied to just a piece of piping that was, you know, close to the ceiling. And there were accounts of it. There was another investigator, because we had a lot, and I love my paranormal investigators. They are my biggest volunteers, and they come out and help me tenfold. And so they were both investigators, and one of them was in the room with the one girl who was tied up, and she was just standing in the corner, you know, ready for people so she could jump out at them. And the one investigator, her arms that were bound, she was being lifted up off the floor. And they thought that somebody was behind them pulling this rope, you know, just goofing off, and there was nobody there.
Oh,
was that Shelby? Was that Shelby?
No, it was Missy and Jessica.
Yeah.
Jessica was the one that was being lifted. Yeah. And then this year, I had an experience out there. Normally, I don't do the depot. Normally, I do tickets and I do the children's activities, you know, the kids 12 and under. And so I know that Dr. Death had radioed me and said, you know, we're running really short on people. A lot of people had to leave early. Can you come out and help us? And I have Girl Scout Troop 45 that I adore. They come to the Exchange and they help me all the time. Anything that I need, they're there. And one of them was a 12-year-old girl, and she was dressed up like a zombie, and she was helping me with the children's activities. And she said, well, I'll go with you. I'll help you. I'm allowed to stay till midnight. I said, okay, let's go. So we go out to the depot, and we're in the last room as you come through the vampire room, the last room that you have to walk out to the stairs to leave. And there's a countertop there, because that used to be the room where the ticket taker was. That's where you paid for your tickets to get on the train and things like that. And she was laid on the countertop and just was laying there looking creepy. And I was standing on the other side of the countertop where you couldn't see me behind the plastic, and I was hitting on the countertop with a 2x4, just making banging noises, and I would scream at the people as they walked out to scare them. And I kept seeing a shadow from left to right walking. I could see it plain as day in that room. And nobody else said anything, so I just kind of kept it to myself. I didn't want to scare her. She's only 12. And we did that for a little while, and then she kind of bent over and looked towards that wall, which was on her opposite side, instead of looking at the people that she's supposed to be scaring, and she's seen it. And she said, oh, did you see that shadow? And I said, yeah, I did. And she goes, oh, I'm scared. Can we get out of here? And I was like, yeah, we'll get out of here. So there was, it looked like a man walking constantly past us in that room.
Well, I knew there was a little boy running around that night we were there. And we caught glimpses of him because I know Heather kept telling me. She was like, well, she's telling me he's right around the corner. And so there was a little boy running around, but there was a man there that night, too, that night we were there. And he was hanging out in the depot that night also.
Yeah. Well, we had three investigators this weekend go out there. We had Sisters of Salem there, and we had Orange County Paranormal, and I can't remember who else. Tidewater. We had a few different people there this weekend, and I didn't go out to the depot. I was with Twisted Paranormal in the kitchen, and when they all went out to the depot and they came back, you know how we regroup, and I was asking, did anybody get anything? What happened? And four of them actually seen a full-bodied apparition of a man standing in the doorway for a good 10 or 15 seconds. Yeah.
Wow, that is awesome. That is wild.
They had noises. They had a whistle. They had an EVP of a whistle. So it was pretty hopping this past Saturday night.
I know when I went there, it was August. We went with Sisters of Salem as well, and I was out there with I think Ashley.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it was really zigzaggy because the Halloween stuff was still there. And we got to the end, I'm like, you know what, if something happened and we need to get out of here really fast, you know, we got to be running in the dark trying to get through all this, like, Halloween stuff. So we had to move it to the front of the depot because we're like, if something grabs me, I'm not going to be running through walls and stuff trying to get out.
Yeah, you got to be the fastest
to
get out of there.
I have to be as fast as you. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Can you tell us, why don't you
tell us? Well, Angel, we don't want to have time.
Yeah.
Why
don't you tell us about Paracon?
Tell us about Paracon, then we won't kid you for the night. We'll let you jump because I know it's getting late. So if you wanted to jump.
Bless your heart. Thank you. Paracon is a paranormal conference that we came up with 3 years ago, and it was just an idea that we were all sitting there poking around. We wanted a place where everybody could come out, and, you know, there's a lot of bashing in the paranormal world, and we're not fans of that. We want everybody to be united, and we want everybody to build everybody up. And, you know, I personally, I don't like to take away people's experience. You know, there are people that can say that didn't happen, or you have to have this clear-cut proof. I'm not one of those people, you know. If you're there and you have an experience, how does anybody know what happened other than yourself? So
exactly.
I wanted to get a group, you know, of people together and everybody to just have fun. Just, you know, we set up vendor spots and different groups come and we have competitions, who's got the best decorated booth. We have different speakers on different aspects of the paranormal. And it's just a fun day. There's different vendors that have metaphysical items, and I had some psychic mediums out there to do readings. I mean, it's just a fun thing. And I like to see everybody networking and getting to know each other and talking about their experiences and their different investigations that they've done and the families that they've helped and, you know, things like that. So that's what Paracon's all about. This year we're hoping to do the same thing. And we're hoping to have some bigger name people. I'm still fishing around for some, you know, celebrities and see what I can do. But it's going to be fun. It's going to be a whole lot of fun.
Well, I had a great time last year when I went. When I took my daughter, she had a great time.
And it's educational.
And everything.
I mean, did you get to hear any of the lectures? I mean, there's a lot of things that average people don't know, and the public loves to come out, and I love to be able to give them what they need to know. You know, they have so many questions, and we take that stuff for granted because we do it all the time, and we know.
Yeah.
But we don't know that they don't know, and so that's why I like to provide it, too.
I listened to a few lectures, and I spoke about the history of the paranormal research and listen to Howard Odell's speech after mine and Misty Connor's speech. And Mark Higgins? I had to hang out foot at the booth as well. So I caught as much as I could when I could leave the booth and wander over to the tent where the speeches were. And what I heard was very insightful and very educational. You know?
Yeah.
I wish I had brought a notebook with me so I could have written down some of the stuff that was being said. It was very, very helpful and stuff. And you know, had some of the fried chicken. And the chicken lady had some of the food there. It was really good.
Did you get a psychic reading?
No, I didn't do that. I'm planning on doing it this year. I had to bring enough money. I bought these souvenirs. So I ran out of cash. But this time I'll cash my whole paycheck and bring it and just spend it all at the exchange.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. So
definitely. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on and speaking with us.
We'll be in touch too, Angel, about coming out and volunteering maybe once a month or so if that's cool.
That would be awesome.
Definitely.
We would really appreciate it. We're getting a lot of stuff, in gear. We're renovating the kitchen right now. We're taking it back to its bare bones, and we're going to have it set up authentic, the way that it was when it was the actual tavern, when General Ewell stopped there during the Civil War. There's so much history in Gordonsville. I urge everybody to come out, even if you're not into the paranormal. Come out.
Just
there's,
for the
there's
history.
There's so much to learn, yes. Gordonsville had the Secret Service there in Town Hall. That's something that's been uncovered that nobody's talked about. There's something for everybody there. It's not just a Civil War receiving hospital. If you're into the Freedmen's Bureau or if you're into the hotel era and you want to see what a hotel looked like back then, the antiques and the grandeur of it, if you're into the trains are right there. We have the train room. I mean, there's just so much there for everybody. And, we pride ourselves on our paranormal. We're the 15th most haunted. So if you want to get your scare on and you want to come out for that as well, we encourage you. So I appreciate you guys
letting
me come on.
I definitely give my thumbs up to that place for sure. I've been there a couple, three or four times just this year. First time I've ever been there was this year. I keep wanting to go back. So, I'm going back on Sunday. It draws you. It does. I'll come up there on Sunday. So, absolutely. It's a great time.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing you.
Definitely. I look forward to seeing you too. All right.
Thank you guys so much. Y'all have a good night.
All right, sweetie. We'll see you.
Too.
Bye.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was a good interview. She's always nice. I always enjoy talking to her.
Yeah.
For sure. I know you have to go take care of your son.
Yeah, I got a good jump.
Amber,
it's about that time for me to pass out anyway.
I'm still here. Okay, good. Because if Rhonda's gone, I'm going to be talking to myself.
I would have just log in and just listen. That would have been great.
Oh, my God. I'd be like, it
would have been like Garth off of Wayne's World. I'm having a good time. Not.
I'm cool, aren't I? Everyone loves me. Why is everybody calling in? Oh, my God. All right.
Talk to yourself.
All right, Rhonda.
Peace out. I'll see y'all later.
Good night. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
All right. Bye. All right, now, part two with Amber. Welcome back.
Yep. Hi.
So what did you think of the interview?
I think it went pretty well. That was some awesome stuff that I heard. That's pretty freaking cool.
Yeah,
especially with the body stacked up and everything.
Do what? I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. You kind of broke up a little bit.
Especially with the story about the bodies being stacked up.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy because I heard that sometimes the soldiers, you know, they would fall asleep on the train and, you know, they'd be rustling and stuff like that. And they get used to the bump in and stuff. So when they have so many bodies that they take the soldiers off the train and they wouldn't check to see if they were sleeping or not. So, and they stack the bodies up. You could be asleep, wake up, and have like 20 bodies piled on top of you, and you can't move because you're hurt, you have broken arm or whatever. You can't move the bodies off of you, so you end up suffocating.
Damn.
Because you have so many. You can't breathe, and you end up being buried alive on the actual buried underneath bodies.
Yeah, that's straight fucked up.
Yeah, dude, that's not. Definitely not the best way I want to go, for sure. I mean, of course. I mean, who would want to go that way? You know,
yeah,
but I mean, hopefully we'll be able to go out there soon and you know, and investigate out there. But even just going out there during the day and touring the museum is fun and educational. You know,
I want to say that that's one that my mother has been to.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's the same place, she has a picture. There's a guy standing behind, like, she took a picture of one of the pictures there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy in the reflection standing, like, right behind her. And there was no one else there.
Whoa.
Like, she was just walking around.
That is cool. That is awesome.
Yeah.
Too bad you should have said something to Angel when she was on the phone.
Well, I'm not sure if that's the same place or not.
Oh. Yeah, I'd never even heard of the Exchange before I joined ASPS. There's so many Civil War stuff around it. Sometimes stuff just kind of slips through the cracks for me. I don't know every, you know, hospital or whatever they have, but ever since I, you know, heard about it from Howie, you know, I've been fascinated by it, and I've been up. First time I went up there was in June of last year, and I think I've been there like 4 or 5 times. You know, it's really from Richmond. It's really a short trip. You know, like 45 minutes or something away. And it goes by really fast. And it's right in the mountains and stuff. And they have a really good barbecue restaurant next to it. Guaranteed to make your mouth water. As soon as you get out the door, they got the wood smoke, you know, the smoke barbecue. It's like, oh, my God. Makes me drool just thinking about it right now, to be honest.
I know. I hear you. You're ready to wipe your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Shoot, I just want to go up there right now just to smell the barbecue. Oh. Well, and, you know, the Paracon's really fun, too, going up there and seeing everybody. And of course, I had my speech about the history of the paranormal, and it's actually on our YouTube channel. And as soon as I get, like, maybe 5 minutes into my speech, the train goes by. And, you know, it's right... The exchange is right by the train tracks, so constant. The longest train ever is going by. It's like as soon as I finish, that's when the train stops.
Aw, damn.
I thought that was funny. Of course, you know, if I messed up, no one could hear me anyway. So, you know, it's good. So, it's like it doesn't bother me. But I just thought that was funny. That was funny. You know. So, yeah, well, now we have a bit of an open forum going on here because we don't have a guest. You know. Dead air. All right. We can't have that. All right. So, any particular subject you would like to discuss?
I have no earthly idea, to be honest with you.
That's fine. We'll get through this together. You know, I think What are your thoughts on
token life and
it's not me talking. Hang on.
Okay. Oh, God. I'm hearing the voices again. Get out of my head.
No, I've got my roommate sitting here by me. She was talking about something she posted on Facebook. She's trying to pull it up right now. She said something about ghost paths.
Yeah, it's apparently like when the person dies, that they'll retrace their steps. Mm-hmm. If the floor plan of the building changes,
when someone passes away and they, like, don't know they're dead, really.
Yeah.
They retrace their steps
pretty much
like their everyday thing. And they continue to follow the route they used when they were alive, even if the house has been rebuilt since that time. That's why they seem to climb upstairs that no longer...
Like a broken record type. So it goes through the same, motions they went through. That's an interesting theory. Because that would be what a residual haunting is. Hear about stories about phantom women falling downstairs, and every night the same thing happens. The girl, the ghost, falls down the stairs every night at the exact same time. You know, it's like almost like
that's
moment
exactly
in time.
What you're talking about.
Just keeps repeating itself. Wow, that's pretty cool. Where did you find that?
It was just all on Facebook.
Just floating around Facebook.
It's from The Horror Hub.
Horror Hub, check that place out.
My likes, as well as horrific finds.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty good theory. I like that. I think that's because, I mean, I've heard a lot of people, a lot of times when people die, like, really fast or really tragic deaths, and it's like instantaneous. Like I said, they don't know they're dead. A lot of, like, I'm watching Ghost Adventures, they said some workers fell into a fire, some kind of vat full of molten steel, and the death was so instantaneous that they don't realize that they're even dead, and they go, I just get up and go back to work.
I know what you're talking about. That feels like deja vu. When were you talking about that the other day at Howie's?
That was.
But
it fits into the conversation we're having now, so I figured I'd break it back out again.
Oh, yeah. Flip
up my knowledge and throw it at your face.
I remember somebody talking about it, so.
Yes. I am I figured it fits with what we were talking about, so.
Hell yeah.
There's a whole bunch of different theories when it comes to that stuff. And the thing is, it's all theory, but, it's cool people can come up with this stuff and say, hey, maybe it's like this, or maybe this way, or maybe, because there's no definitive answer. Until there is, that's all we have is our theories, So we just got I mean, there's the parallel universe theory, there's the stone tape theory. A whole bunch of different things.
The belief I'm under is that people... So, actually, this theory was just explained to me by someone close to me. They came up with this theory when they were fucking 15 years old, okay? 15.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just telling me about this the other day, that, people are made up basically of electricity, right?
Yeah.
That is why you have, an electric charge.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a high enough, electromagnetic thing about you,
mm-hmm.
what's to say that you're not just leaving behind that electric charge when you go? And, I mean, that was his explanation for a residual.
Well, that makes sense. That does make sense.
Or maybe it was for ghosts in general, but a residual, it would make more sense.
Yeah.
Because if you get up and you're doing the same routine, say you're me, for instance, like I wake up mm-hmm. at about 7:30. I get up, I brush my teeth, I eat breakfast, and I leave the house. So mm-hmm. if I were to die tomorrow and I leave behind my electrical impulse or whatever you want to call it, the electrical pulse thing, if I have a high enough, you know, electromagnetic thing going and I die and it stays here, you'd hear me, you know, every morning getting up and doing the same shit over and over, because that's what I do every day. So I guess hardwired into that.
Well, I mean, I remember we heard a pop happen, like a static charge.
Yeah.
At Telenevis before
I remember
we heard
hearing
the EVPs.
That
one. Yeah. We actually have. I was gonna say we actually have CPR Matt on with us. Hello, Matt. How you doing?
I was so gonna leave you hanging, but no.
I appreciate that.
I was gonna let you sit there and suffer and be like, hello? Matt, are you with us? Hello?
Yes,
no,
sir,
I'm not
answer
gonna
me, damn it.
So
yeah,
all right. So what the current conversation is about actual personal imprinting on an environment, correct?
Basically, yes.
Yes.
All right. There is I'm going to dive right into it. Forget it. Sorry.
Thanks. Go
I
on.
Thought it was
on,
I thought it was still unleashed. I almost said a swear word.
Hey, you know, this is freaking off the train almost. You can go whatever the hell you want.
What's wrong with swear words?
Bring it on.
What swear words? Fuck? What?
What?
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck you want. I don't care. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, we both are correct. No, leaving an imprint on an environment is an interesting theory.
Mm-hmm.
But there really is no proof to it. Yes, both of you are correct, and if you're walking through, you're getting up, you're doing your day-to-day routine to
mm-hmm.
create a residual haunting. But residual doesn't have, like, in my thinking, in my process, residual doesn't have memory on an environment. It would be something dramatic. It would be something catastrophic.
Well, like that girl falling down the stairs every night, same time. She falls down the stairs and breaks. There's a house in Goochland, Virginia, that there was a girl every night, supposedly, you know, she, girl with a lantern. She walked down the stairs, halfway down the stairs. She screams, throws her lantern in the air. She falls down the steps. People have seen it, and she said they said it, the apparition is headless because the fall broke her neck. So now she appears on the floor or on the stairs without a head. That's a tragic, you know, tragic event. But is that residual
Was she decapitated?
Oh no! I guess I don't know why. I don't know why she disappears without a head. That's just what the story said. That's what are in the book, and that's why people have seen her that way. And they say that she did break her neck, and maybe that's why she appears without a head. You know, I don't ever heard of him being decapitated by falling down the stairs. Yeah, that would be a new one. But you know, as far as why she's headless, I don't know. But I know that's the story, because I remember hearing the story when I was a kid, and it scared the crap out of me, and they never wanted to go to that house ever. Now, I'll be like, well, let's go. But back then, I'm like, no. You know?
Well,
but,
yeah. I mean, after you get your feet wet, it's like, you get to the point, fuck it, yeah, let's go.
Oh, my God. It's like, once you catch that fever, man, it's like, bring it. I don't care. Though, you know, I still don't think I want to go to a house by myself. So mostly because if I say I see something and no one's there, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, right, whatever. You didn't see shit. Or I like to have people there, something that, you know, back me up as far as, like, evidence is concerned, you know. But, yeah, once you get that fever, man, you just want to go. You know, you don't want to stop.
Well, and also, I'm going to play grandpa on this one. For safety reasons, you don't want to go to a house by yourself because you could possibly be a part of that house if the floorboards give way or whatever, and then you have people like Ryan and myself and Dennis and everybody who's going to come out and check you out and ask what the hell happened.
Exactly. We'll be getting kind of EVPs from you for whatever does it, you know. And it's smart to not go by yourself, because when you're by yourself and you're in a dark room in a house you know is haunted, you think is haunted, your mind will start playing tricks on you. And, you know, you start hearing things that, you know, you're like, oh, God, what's that, you know. And you start freaking yourself out. Because you can, once you get excited, you get really pumped up, you're like, oh, man, I hear something upstairs, and it could just be the house settling, but then your heart starts pounding really fast, and you start freaking out a little bit. And you could really hurt yourself by not paying attention to where you are, and, you know, you could be like a table there you don't see because it's dark, and you twist your ankle, and you break your leg or something, you can't get out of the house. And yeah, it's definitely a good idea to be with someone else, for sure.
Yeah. So, Ryan, I'm gonna flip the tables a little bit right now. Remember when Dennis and I were messaging you last night about the conversation we were having?
Oh, yeah, the deep conversation. Yeah, I'm sorry I missed out on that one, that's for sure.
Well, this is where I'm going to bring you into it.
Okay.
All right, and basically what I was trying to convey, and Dennis was receptive, it wasn't like it was an argument or anything, but I swear to God, the whole conversation, if anybody could have been a fly on the wall, we would have turned the tables of mentality and thought. We got so deep, it was fucking ridiculous. But on the lighter side of things, the conversation that we were talking about, and I'm going to pose this to anybody who's involved or anybody who's listening, call in and give your thoughts if you want. That's fine. Once somebody passes away, whether it be a family member, whether it be you go to a psych ward and it's somebody there, do you think that they're just stuck in that location wandering around, or do you think that they come there because they're asked to come there?
What, meaning like to give comfort to people, or just...
No, being like, it's almost a summons, if you will.
Uh-huh.
But say, all right, for example, like Cherry Road, who is a place that's local to me that I've been to numerous times. I've gotten amazing stuff, and it started from an urban legend.
Mm-hmm.
But the main person, the main woman, that her spirit is there, Audrey. And you can ask Dennis about this, because that was the main topic of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, when Dennis did a remote read, he got punched in the face. He got he did the most spot on read I've ever seen anybody ever do.
Of your place you're talking about, Cherry Road, is that what they call?
Cherry Road, yes.
Okay.
Cherry as in the fruit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
all right. Okay.
Is Audrey like the spirit that haunts that location? Is she constantly there, or like just walking up and down the road and waiting for us to come, or is does she transfer from somewhere else to when we're there asking for her?
Well, I mean, I think some people, if they like a place that much and they love the, where they lived, some people won't want to leave. And they're like, I'm not going. I'm staying right here. This is my home. I'm not going anywhere. Maybe they're scared to go to heaven. Maybe they don't want to see what's on the other side. Maybe they're scared because maybe they live a great life, and they're like, well, you know I'm okay here, but if I go through the doors, I might be going down there. I might be going up there. It's a bit, you know, I don't know which one I'm gonna. I don't know which one I'm gonna be sent to. I know I'm pretty safe here, so I'm gonna stay here.
Oh,
I think a lot of times
she was.
She
was not the best person. And this is a 167-page police report about her life, about her autopsy, about everything. She was basically a drug addict.
Mm-hmm.
Her body was dumped, like she was killed in the stockyards in Chicago. And
how long
she
was it?
Dumped. The mid, like early to mid 80s.
Oh, okay. So it's recent, pretty recent, I guess.
Compared
yeah,
to not like turn.
Yeah.
Not like turn of the century or anything.
Yeah. Okay.
But,
I got you.
So her ankles and her wrists and her neck were bound by barbed wire, and she was dumped into a farmer's irrigation well. The only reason the farmer found her was because her body was sucked up into the pump while he was irrigating his field, and he checked the blockage in the bottom of the pump, and it happened to be a woman named Audrey Moore.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Gruesome, and I apologize for that, but
hey, I mean, it's truth. It's fine. You know, it is what it is. You know?
So Cherry Road had the, and I'll backtrack real quick. I know you got a half hour left, and that's enough time for me to get one sentence out normally. But, so Cherry Road had a myth of what was called Help Road, H-E-L-P, which... there's a lot of places throughout the country who have one. The backstory
help
is
load?
A help, H-E-L-P.
Okay, what is help load? What is that?
No, help road, R-O-A-D.
Help road. I said help load, like it's like some kind of like, I don't know, help road. Okay, all right, sorry.
Yeah, give me 1 second.
Okay.
Stupid earbuds, I honestly hate the things. So the myth of Help Road, and
mm-hmm.
pretty much every county and every area has looked into it. Well, what it is there's a guy and a girl who are on their way home from prom or on a motorcycle, and there's a tragic accident, and in a last-ditch effort, there's somebody who crawls up to the road and writes help in their own blood before they pass away, whether it be the guy or the girl or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And then no matter how many times the road's repaved, help in blood shows up on the road. So
okay. So that's like Civil War soldiers get killed and or die in a hospital, and the blood of the soldier still shows up no matter what happens, no matter how much they paint over it or they replace the floors even, the blood still shows up.
Pretty much the same thing. Or even the kids on the train tracks, if you park your car and you put it neutral, it'll roll over the train tracks.
You know,
then
you'll push the car over and you get the fingerprints on the back of your car.
Yeah, that's kind of what my friend Mark and I who started CPR, we started to investigate. We were bored one night. There was this urban legend, and what the hell, let's go check it out and see what we can figure out. Well, we started getting EVPs. We started getting objects thrown at us. We saw the most amazing light anomaly that we have ever, ever seen to this day that happened right in front of us. And I swear to God, nothing will ever top that. But
well, that's pretty cool for your first investigation. Yeah, you know, if you're just messing around.
We've been out there at least 10 times.
Okay, I thought this was like your first time ever going out there, and you did all this cool stuff. Like, oh, that's pretty convincing, right?
Oh,
there.
Oh no, it was progressive. Like the first time we were out there, we caught a couple voices, and I had a rock thrown at me.
Mm-hmm.
The second time was a bunch of voices and taps on the shoulder, like just a bunch of weird shit.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the most amazing thing about it is 6 months after the first time that we were out there, and I didn't even pay attention to this, it was on the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
I was sitting at, and which happened to be on Halloween, and no, that has no correlation to anything, the fact that it was Halloween. But it was 6 months to the day that I had our first time out there. I was sitting in a restaurant, and it was Jeff Resman, Nancy Resman, John Stevenson, Ursula was supposed to be there, but her daughter got sick. There was about 15 of us that are paranormal people. And I was sitting there talking with John Stevenson, and Jeff Resman looks at me and he goes, "Dude, I really need to talk to you." I'm like, "Why?" He goes, "There's a girl that's walking past the bar." He goes, "She's about 5'5", thin. She's very, very cute, and she keeps eyeing you." And I'm like, "Well, fucking call her over, you know?" Like,
yeah,
some 5'5", short hair, blonde chick, yeah, bring her ass over.
Yeah, man.
He goes, "No, she's not with us." I'm like, "What is... Oh.
But she's right there. She's like, bring over."
He goes, "No, she's staring at you right now, but she's not with us." I'm like, "Oh,
ooh,
shit." I'm like,
"So you're picking up a ghost?"
Yeah. I'm like,
"Wow.
You possibly have a name?" And he goes, "I'm getting Aubrey or Audrey more Audrey than Aubrey, but something along those lines." And
so could you see her?
Did
you see her yourself, or was she like behind you?
Me,
I was looking at her.
Yeah, she was behind me.
Okay.
And
so
he goes, she's telling me that there's something more than I'm supposed to tell. Well, now she's telling me that I'm wrong, but more is kind of what I'm getting. And, well, the fucked up thing about this whole story is the woman that was found on Cherry Road, mind you, we're about 10 miles southeast of where Cherry Road is. Her name is Audrey Moore, M-O-O-R-E. She was 5'5". With short blonde hair, she was really, she was pretty attractive. And this is per the autopsy report. This
wow.
is 6 months after, and I have somebody telling me that she's following me and nailed her name and description.
So she was following you. She wasn't just at the bar and you happened to be there? Or have you heard, has there been any more reports of her being around you since then? Have people seen her around you?
Oh, yeah, I've had Dennis has sensed her. Chelsea Damali from Haunted Encounters has sensed her. But
do you think she feels safe with you? Just maybe she's so used, she's been with so many abusive men throughout her life that she found someone, hey, you know, maybe she feels safe around you or something. And she's scared to go and see what's on the other side.
Yeah, it's possible. But,
you know,
I mean,
yeah.
it's, you know, when something happens, and I shit you not, like, I'm not one of those people that, in the times that we've talked, I'm very analytical the same way that you are.
Yeah.
It's, if I call out, you know, Audrey, if something's
mm-hmm.
happening,
mm-hmm.
shit stops. it's so weird.
Wow. Well, yeah. Wow. Well, at least she listens to you and she respects you enough to stop what she's doing if it's bothering you. You know, I mean, do you know any reason? Do you know any reason why she would be following you? I mean, just. Can you think of anything?
From what everybody that I've talked to has said is I'm the first actual pure and true, and no, this isn't a plug for me, ladies or gents. I'm the first pure and true, like, actual nice guy that
mm-hmm.
and giving with a whole heart.
Mm-hmm.
that she's ever had in her life, and she doesn't want to let me go.
So, yeah, kind of like what I said earlier, that she's been so used to being abused by whoever she's with, all the drug dealers, and, you know, she's had a really rough life. She finally found someone that she could trust or come attached to, and she doesn't want to give that up. You know, that kind of
yeah.
makes sense, you know, because you live a life like that, and you're just constantly berated all your life and you end up in a ditch with barbed wire around your neck and you're like, oh my God, what happened to my life? And you see this guy like, oh, hey, you know, this guy's pretty cool. I'm going to hang out with him. He'll protect me from the bad people that are trying to get me because maybe there's spirits out there that have died and they're trying to get her in the afterlife as well. Maybe some of her drug dealer friends are still around. They're still looking for her. And maybe she's looking to you for protection or something.
Well, what's amazing about it, too, is when we've been out there, and, dude, I can send you all the EVPs from Cherry Road. Like, I have everything in audio file that I can share.
I'd love to hear them. Would love to hear them. That would be great, man. That'd be awesome.
There's a guy out there, if in fact within this whole crime story is correct,
mm-hmm.
I've gotten his name, and he is so pissed off. He didn't start showing up until, like, the third time that we were out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the first two times, we were getting, you know, little stuff here and there, like, you know, EVPs help me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here, you know, shit like that. But
uh-huh.
once we started doing direct, like, and going through the police report and doing direct comments, is we get this pissed off guy, and here's where you're gonna have to talk to Dennis for validation of it, and he can honestly tell you. Her boyfriend, who I'm not going to say his name because I kind of can't, and
oh,
two of his friends
uh-huh.
who are still alive, they like, they've given us stuff, an energy imprint that is so horrible and phenomenal at the same time. It's like, well, this dude's still alive, and they're all three are in prison right now.
Well, I've actually heard of that, where some people will be in prison, and their spirits are still at the location where they committed the murder. Or they, I guess not, on the what? I don't know what to call them. I don't know if they were on the spirits because they're still alive, but maybe, I guess their imprint, like you said, are still at the location of where they committed the crime.
But, I mean, it truly doesn't make sense.
No. Well, I mean, honestly, you know, it's hard to make sense out of any of this, to be honest, you know, it's, you know, but yeah, it really doesn't make sense if he's still there and you're getting EVPs from him, and he's in prison and he's not there. It's like maybe like astral projection or something, or maybe what he did at the location was so horrible that a piece of him stayed there, and it's like a living ghost. Maybe that's one thing I could think of.
Sorry, I'm in and out. I'm putting pasties on my roommate because she's going to do a photo shoot.
See that? That's the kind of information we need to have on Freaking Awesome Paranormal Show.
No shit, right?
All the boobs.
Oh, man. Well, forget what Matt was talking about. Let's talk about boobs. Woo!
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
what do you think, Amber?
Hello? Boobs, Amber.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Do what?
You can't tease us like that. You can't say boobs or pasties and then stop talking. You know?
He's putting stuff on her boobies.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, where are the pics? You can put them on our Facebook page. Okay, I'm going to stop talking now.
So, hey, real quick, I got to throw out a question.
Okay.
Since we're not going to talk about boobs.
Which, if she gets on, if she gets off, she's like a ninja. She'll get off like 2 seconds.
Yeah.
First off,
sorry,
I'm
no, I've got my own mute button.
So, real quick, how are you guys liking the URN family?
So far, so good. I mean, I think
absolutely
we've had...
hate all of you. No, I'm just kidding.
We can't stand you, right?
You guys are horrible.
I think we're having a good time. You know, I mean, besides those guys from the Full Spectrum Unleashed, I mean, besides them, we're having a good time. But you know, those guys are just assholes. You know?
Nah, I'm actually surprised Dennis isn't on right now. But
I thought I had a job to do or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm going to announce this on your show, and I'm going to announce it on my show also. We have a new addition, which is Ryan and Robert, the Debunker Boys, are going to be on Saturday nights. Time slot is still in debate.
Uh-huh.
But, yes, we will have a Saturday night show.
Well, welcome to the family. That's awesome.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah. We're no longer the rookies, you know. We're no longer the newbies. That's cool. I'll have to give them a listen. For sure. I mean, I think you had them on recently, and you know, I think I haven't listened to that show yet. I've been so busy with the move because they're moving offices, and I just every day I get to work. Just usually I have time to listen to. I'll listen to the show and do work at my computer. Basically my computer's on the floor at my office. I had to lay down on the floor to get on the radio, to get the studio and stuff. So everything's there on boxes all around me and stuff. So hopefully by next week I'll be back on track and everything will be, you know, good to go. So, but that's great news for them. It's awesome. congratulations to them if they're listening. If not, you know, congratulations anyways. Are you having any you have any guests on your show this Wednesday night? Anybody coming on?
Full Spectrum, the way that we run it is kind of just whoever's available at the time.
Okay.
We will pre-book, but most of the time it's Dennis and I wing it. So we may have a guest for one thing. Dennis is currently, as we speak, working on that.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, no, it's, you know, it's one of those things, like, it keeps it fresh in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we do, maybe we don't.
You got to tune in to find out. That's cool.
Exactly.
Hey, that's cool. That's cool. Because you've been this long enough that you can get a guest in the last minute and still have a great show. So we're new to this, so we kind of like to have a little bit research. I kind of like to have a little bit of research done before, you know, so I actually know the right questions to ask the guests and stuff like that. Because I don't want to come off looking like I don't know what I'm talking about, which would happen to me if I booked the guest last minute, you know. It's cool that you can do that and still, you know, and still sound like you know what you're talking about. Dude, I couldn't do that. I'd have to get some research done and stuff. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, I've listened to your show when I get the chance, but it's usually on the replay. You know, because I have my daughter and everything at home. It's hard to listen to the radio and take care of her at the same time. You know? But going back to what we were talking about before, I mean, what do you think? Why do you think you're getting the EVPs from her boyfriend on Cherry Road?
That's, you know what, it could be environmental imprinting. Could be,
mm-hmm.
like, and feeling remorse. But
was it a sad EVP, or is it like, I'm gonna kill that? You know, was it like violent towards you, or was it like,
I know it's definitely aggressive.
Okay. So, it could be the feelings that he had are still there. Is so angry, it jumped out of, this sounds really stupid, crazy, but it jumped, the feelings head was so angry, so just insane, maybe he was on drugs or something, his anger was so awful, it jumped off him, and it stayed there, and it's just constantly, always constant anger all the time, it just never stops. He might be in jail, regretting, like, I'm sorry, I did not mean to, that's what happened, he could be remorseful in jail, but that one part of him is still there. It's still, that's so, you know, the anger is so powerful, it just kind of stayed there. It makes you wonder what would happen if he went back to that place, if he was feeling remorseful, if he encountered his own anger.
But they are intelligent. It's not like it's just whatever. It's direct answers to direct questions.
Well, could it be something other? It can't be like a demon type thing acting like him, a spirit, like a entity, not a ghost per se, but something else to answer questions like him.
Here's the thing about demons, though, and you can talk to any demonologist about this.
Mm-hmm.
Demons are one of the most few and far between things that you will ever encounter in the paranormal. So,
okay, well, let's X out demons then. Is it something that could mock, a spirit that could mock another spirit. And I know spirits, sometimes they can mock the voices of people. Could it be another spirit who's mocking that guy?
He's acting like that guy.
Maybe a lower level spirit who wants to be all tough, so he's acting like that guy. You know,
it definitely could be.
You know, it's just like it's just theories, and it's hard because you don't have a definitive answer. You know, you're just throwing stuff at the wall to see if it sticks, if it makes sense. You know.
Yeah. Well, and that's one thing, and I'm glad that you said that. That's one thing that I think this field has lost completely. Mm-hmm. Is the possibility for rational thought. Like, oh, I got something gruff. It's a demon. Oh, I got something that makes sense to me, but it doesn't. Well, it's something horrible from beyond.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people need to look at things more analytically and say try to break it down and see. You know, if they can find an earthly explanation before they jump into paranormal. I look at these pictures on, these girls taking pictures, a bunch of pictures on Facebook. I'm not going to say the name of the lady, whatever. But it was a bunch of white spots, and she was like, look at all these paranormal photographs. And you could tell that it was raindrops or dust in the air, you know. But, you know, she was convinced that she was surrounded by orbs. And I got pictures. I went out with Howie to a location in Richmond where our hotel used to be, and it was raining. I took pictures, and there was a flash, and the flash going, and the flash hit the raindrops, and it looked like white, little white circles all around. So it was rain. I could tell it was rain. And it's the same girl, same pictures the girl had, the exact same thing. You know, I mean, I don't know if she knows it's rain and she's just saying it's orbs or what, but you know, if people look at those pictures and honestly believe that particular location is surrounded by so many orbs, they're not really looking at it with an analytical point of view. They're jumping to conclusions, which, you know, isn't the right way to go. You know, I don't think personally in this line of business.
So,
but it's healed.
I know there's like 7 minutes left, but what do you think of which I know you've seen, the house in Gary, Indiana, about the photos that have been posted?
Well, I've actually seen the photos, to be honest with you. I've heard the stories, and I heard, I listened to the priest was on Darkness Radio the other day, and the way he was talking, it didn't sound very demonic. They heard reports that psychologists have talked to the kids, and it seemed to be more of a issues inside their heads. I mean, I heard the stories of the girl, one of the kids walking backwards up the wall or something. And I think a lot of stuff has been exaggerated. Heard that one of the cops had said that he was looking forward to the notoriety that it would bring him and stuff like that. So I don't know for sure. I am not going to say I believe it. I'm just going to not so much say I don't believe it. I'm just going to try to learn more about it, I guess. And I don't want to say yes or no, but I'm learning more toward it's not as bad as they say it is. I want to say nothing happened, but may it say it's more of a spiritual activity than demonic, from what the priest was saying on the radio. You know, he said, I think he heard their light would turn on and in the room when he was talking about a certain thing, or you know, or a lady would try to start talk about her ex-boyfriend and she'd start getting really sick. So it might be an attachment sent to her from her ex-boyfriend, but I don't. This is all from what I've heard on the radio and, you know, from different reports and stuff. So, you know, as far as my
I don't know about that.
I've been at that house.
You have?
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Everything online is, yeah, it's kind of crap.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's
only my personal experience.
Well, I'm not trying to belittle what that lady went through. I'm sure she went through a lot of stuff. You know, but I don't know if the house is a portal to hell. I think would the policemen have an EVP of someone saying hey or something? I heard.
Hey, real quick, you got 4 minutes left, so.
I know ASPS. We have our official first classroom session on Saturday, and we have our first investigation at Belnemis Plantation on the 22nd of February coming up. Do you have anything going on up in Chicago, Matt? Do you want to plug?
Just kind of the usual. So it's pretty stagnant when you get into negative temperatures.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess it slows down a little bit.
Yeah.
You want to be standing outside?
No, it's, well, hold on. It is -3 right now.
Oh, that's funny.
What's going on?
Yeah, it's -3 in Chicago.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, -3. Like, it's in Bay Area 3 degrees in Chicago right now.
Oh.
That's shorts weather out there for you, man. You should be outside sunning yourself if it was, you know, daytime.
So you guys are so bored? You're talking about the weather?
Go play some Frisbee or something.
My bad.
Yeah, you started talking about pasties. We totally got off the subject. I can't think about anything else now. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, it's all just bare dude's breasts with pasties. Come on.
And then you talk about boobs when you get off. So we have two guys on the phone talking about boobs. That's a great conversation. I'm sure people love hearing about that.
Oh. Anyway, yes, we do have a couple things that are coming up. A lot of private residence stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not like we can go out to Bachelor's Grove and do anything that matters besides freeze.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to concentrate on EVPs when you're freezing your balls off. Even here in Richmond, you know, they're you know, even though like the like Civil War battlefields, like Cold Harbor or whatever, you know, even during the day, you can go out there. It's cold and you can't really. It's hard to concentrate on what your surroundings as far as paranormal activity is concerned when it's so cold. All you do is think about how cold it is. But we're in our last minute of the show, and I want to thank Angel from the Exchange for coming on and talking to us, giving us a great interview and a lot of fun talking to her. And Matt, thank you very much for coming on and talking with us and, you know, helping us out the last hour. Rhonda, if you're still listening, thank you very much for, helping us out. You know, great interview with Angel. Amber, thank you for mentioning pasties and, you know, boobs and stuff, because that's awesome. Hope your roommate looks awesome. Hope you did a good job and don't fall off on her. And this is me saying goodbye really slow because it's almost done. Hope you guys have a great night, and we are out of here.
All right. Good night, everybody.
All right. Good night.
Yeah, good night.
So now I just leave music myself, and it's going to come on.
I don't know. I think it doesn't.
I think it's supposed to do it itself.
Too. Oh.
Oh, you know, I thought it automatically cuts off.
Archives or whatever.
Yeah, it's already off. We're in the archives now.
Okay. Oh. Well, that was
sorry I wasn't there for some of the show, but.
No, you got to figure that out, though, because I think next week it's going to, I don't think we're going to have, we said it before.
It's
going to
be just me and you, right?
Week. No, we're going to have to have you back. We're going to have you on more.
Yeah, I know, I
next
know.
Next week, I think. If you want to, you can come over here.
Yeah,
that's come
what
over
I
here
can.
And do the.
I do not. I have red lipstick.
Huh?
I don't know. Sorry,
I'm
in two places at once right now.
All right, well, that's all good. We're taking pictures of your friend's face, by the way.
I don't know where it went. I'm so derp.
All right, well, I think I'm going to get off. I'm going to head on back to my house, I think.
Okay, I'm probably going to go to bed.
Oh, that's good. I may probably do the same thing when I get home. All right,
we'll figure it out next time. So. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry I wasn't there much, but.
It's fine, but I think if we have a discussion, like next week, if Lana has to go, and if it's just me and you on there, you know. It's going to be hard. You know, it's hard to
do. I don't like that.
You know, you can't really put yourself on mute and stuff. So it'll be good. We'll figure it out. All right.
Okay. All right.
Talk to you later. Thanks for talking.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Bye.
Bye.